You're listening to Gruesome and Unnatural, a true crime podcast. Welcome back to another episode of Gruesome and Unnatural. I'm Shelley.
And I'm Eric, and this is episode 74.
Hello, my gruesome addicts. Welcome back to another episode.
What up, yo?
You ready? Ready to hear this gruesome story?
Yeah, we had like a week off.
Yeah, I gave you a little break. Yeah. You're lucky I had midterms.
I was getting really evil there.
Yeah.
A lot of ideas.
Don't like that. We don't like that. Yeah. Anyways, are you ready?
Let's do it.
Paul Michael Stefani was born September 8th, 1944, in Austin, Minnesota. He was the youngest of 10 children to parents Isidore Stefani and Madeline Stefani, later changed to Madeline Bliss after she divorced Isidore and remarried Herbert Bliss when Paul was 3 years old. Paul claimed that his stepfather was abusive towards not only him, but his siblings as well. Paul said that if you got in his way, he would smack them on the head and send them flying down the stairs.
Damn. So he
wasn't a good guy. When Paul was 13 years old, he fell into Dobbin Creek trying to retrieve a golf ball, but he was saved by his brother Gary, who pulled him out of the creek. The article states...
Seen a friend do that.
Try to get a ball and fall into a creek?
Yeah.
Are you serious? Like a golf course or something? Like a short little tiny creek or something?
You know, water hole, pond or something.
Oh, are you serious?
Yeah.
A friend or you?
Yeah, a friend.
Or you?
I've never done that.
That sucks. But yeah, the article states two saved from drowning on same day. So there's another kid that I guess found this creek too, but this is what the article said. A second near drowning in Austin Wednesday was averted when 13-year-old Paul Stefani, son of Mr. and Miss Herbert Bliss, 2 miles east on Highway 16, was pulled from Dobbin Creek at the country club. Paul and older brothers Gary and Ralph and Sammy were hunting golf balls in the area in the afternoon, and Paul went into the creek about 4 p.m. for the ball. The youth was coming out when he apparently blacked out and fell backward. His brother Gary pulled him out with the other two friends assisting, and a call was immediately placed to the fire department. The fire ambulance took Paul to St. Olaf Hospital, where he was reported in good condition and was released in the same day. Hunting golf balls. I thought that was, I guess they're just trying to find golf balls around or something. And
yeah.
I just thought that was like hunting them. I don't know. Paul eventually graduated from high school, and years later, when he was 26 years old, he moved to St. Paul, Minneapolis, taking on various jobs, but just couldn't keep one, and he would blame this on the fact that when he was a child, he was diagnosed with epilepsy. He finally met a woman by the name of Beverly Leiter, and the two married in 1970 and had a daughter together, although that relationship would not work, and the couple divorced just 5 years after they got married. But then Paul just abandoned like his daughter. Obviously, you know, he got divorced, but he just abandoned his daughter, was never in her life. And he started dating another woman about 4 years, although she left him for an arranged marriage, which she had absolutely no control of, right?
What the fuck?
Yeah.
It's the fucking Middle Ages.
I mean, this is what, 70s? Yeah, I know, yeah. So she left him for an arranged marriage, and this devastated Paul. Like, he was expecting to get married to her, you know? So it was just, like, super devastating to him. He was working as a janitor at the Momberg Manufacturing Company in 1977, although he got fired from that job. So he started, like, his life just kind of started spiraling out of control. So he turned to a life of crime and murder. Before he went on to murder, he was once convicted of aggravated assault. And I couldn't really find much more. Like, I don't know exactly the details behind that.
You ruined it for me by saying he goes on to a life of crime and murder, by the way.
I did, but...
I thought it was going to be a good story.
Very important.
Happy ending.
I know.
Finds his daughter, lives happily ever after.
Finds his daughter after he abandoned her? Yeah.
Nope. Who knew this
Taking
was going to be about murder?
Taking a turn. We're going to start with his first victim, Karen Potak. The early morning hours of December 31st, 1980, a cold New Year's Eve morning... I mean, it's snowing, it's Minnesota. 20-year-old Karen Potak, a University of Stevens Point student, was walking home from a nightclub at approximately 1 a.m. near Pierce Butler Road and Syndicate Avenue in St. Paul. She was brutally attacked by 36-year-old Paul Stefani with a tire iron. At around 3 a.m., the police received a call from Paul. They didn't know it was him, obviously, at this time. But this is that 911 call.
A 911 call from Paul.
Yes, please. This is an emergency. Please send a squad to Pierce Butler Road, Muhlenberg Manufacturing Company, machine shop. Please, there's an ambulance, too. There's a girl hurt there.
Can you tell me what happened to her?
Just hurry. She's laid on the ground in the back by the railroad tracks, by the engine.
What's the address?
I don't know.
Who are you?
So that's the call they get. After what
sounds
we know.
Like a retarded Muppet baby.
I know.
Oh, so we've sent someone over here. I know. There's a horrible
tragedy. Seriously, I know. It's so ridiculous. He's obviously trying to sound like he just found this woman, right? Like he didn't just fucking brutally attack her. Like fucking psycho. So crazy. So it wasn't until later that morning that she was found in the snow, and miraculously, Karen survived the attack but was left without her memory because she was beaten so bad with the tire iron that she sustained multiple wounds to the head and neck, which left her brain, like, exposed.
Damn.
Yeah, he hit her so hard. So when she was found, they thought she was, like, dead for sure, right? But she survived with brain damage, but she remembered nothing about the attack from Paul. And she didn't even know it was him. Like, she had no recollection of it. So almost 6 months later, on June 3rd of 1981, Kimberly Compton, an 18-year-old graduate of Pepin, Wisconsin, arrived by bus to downtown St. Paul. She got a locker at the bus station for her bags, and she went off and searched for something to eat. Directly across the road from the bus depot was Mickey's Diner. So she walked across the street and ordered the special of the day, which was barbecue beef and fries. Yum. No, why are you giving me that?
What's barbecue beef?
I don't know. Barbecue beef.
Like a steak or like ribs?
I don't know. That's what it said. Maybe. Huh. Yeah. Maybe like some ribs. Some
I should know that, but I never go to a place and say I want some barbecue beef.
Yeah, no, I guess. Yeah.
Sounds like beef ribs or something.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. But she sat in a booth and she enjoyed this meal by herself. Sitting just a few booths away from her was Paul, also enjoying a meal. He noticed Kimberly sitting alone, so he walked over, struck up a conversation with her, and offered her a ride to, you know, around St. Paul to, like, see the city. And she was like, that's awesome. There's a local. Like, he's being so nice. I get to go see the city. You know, I'm just sitting here by myself thinking he's a nice guy. So she accepts it, right? Unfortunately, Kim's body was discovered by a group of teenage boys in a wooded area north of Superior and Oneida Streets in St. Paul.
I don't mean to laugh. No, I know. You just went from super nice, like...
Nice
like,
guy.
Yeah, you know, he's just going to show me around. Unfortunately, they found her body later that
night. No, I know. Like,
that's fucked up.
I know. It's super fucked up. I know.
Like, don't go. Don't follow. Have a guy come up to you and be like, hey, let me show you around the city.
Yeah,
I know. I don't know you. Let's go after my barbecue beef dinner.
I know. I would never do that in a million years.
That's not.
But she did, unfortunately. She was stabbed 61 times with an ice pick.
That's wounds. Excessive.
I know. 60. This guy's insane. He stabbed her in the chest, stomach, the inner thighs, and then he ended up strangling her with a shoelace.
That's fucking horrible.
I know.
Weird. With a shoelace and then stabs her 61 times.
Remember the ice pick, though.
We always hear these murders where they get stabbed excessively. Mm-hmm. And it's. I think... You've told me this before. It's like a psychological thing of so much hate
built up
where they just like mm-hmm. keep going and keep going.
Usually I hear it either more that like,
or they're really bad at stabbing.
And they're maybe.
They're like, fuck.
Yeah.
Didn't get it right. I gotta try again. That's horrible. Someone died. What are you laughing for?
I know. You're saying horrible things. But the crazy, I always hear like family members, like they're so angry with like their family member or something. And that's why they do it so many times. But like to a stranger, that's kind of weird. Like, you know,
yeah.
I don't know, maybe try to have sex with her or something and she didn't want to. So that's why he's stabbing her in all these crazy places. I don't know. But like, yeah, that's aggressive. Not only did police get a call from these boys informing them of what they came across, but police once again receive a weeping phone call from Paul.
Sorry for laughing, guys. These episodes aren't funny.
They're not. I don't know why you're laughing so much.
It's how I get through the pain.
All right. Here's that call.
Oh, you finally, I just stabbed somebody with an ice pick. I can't stop myself. I keep killing somebody.
That's another fucking stupid call. He's like, I keep killing somebody. It's like, you're a fucking idiot. Yeah, so he just keeps fucking calling back, but he's making such short calls, they can't track who's calling, you know? So it's like, he just like keeps going on with them. So police responded and found Kimberly Compton lying face down near an unfinished freeway just south of St. Paul. There was a secluded area where you could catch a nice view of the Mississippi River. So they thought Paul had driven Kimberly there and then used the promise of that nice view to lure her like out of the car. Kimberly had no identification on her, but police found her key from that locker from the bus station that I talked about. They found her locker. They, you know, inside were her bags. And that's where initially they found her identification and knew it was her. The autopsy showed an undigested meal in her stomach, which was another reason why the police were able to piece together their movements, because they knew that Mickey's Diner. Yeah, they knew that Mickey's Diner across the road from the bus station was there. And then they saw the special on the menu, the barbecue beef and fries. And so, and then they know that Kimberly arrived that night and they matched what was in her stomach. And, you know, that's how they were able to piece some of their moments all together. So kind of interesting.
I never thought of that in the true crime world of looking into someone's stomach. But like, I've done that like quail hunting. So you see what the quail are eating, like seeds and bugs and stuff. So you can like hunt around certain trees or plants where they're going to be.
Oh, that's so interesting.
A lot of hunters do that with different species and stuff. But the true crime world never thought of that. Like, they opened up a stomach. Where? Barbecue beef special. Where was this? Exactly. Had this yesterday.
Good.
You know?
Exactly. Like, it's so true.
Also,
it's true.
This guy's voice on these 911 calls.
Yeah.
I hope it's his real voice, like at the end.
Yeah.
Like, we just caught him. Oh, you finally caught me.
I know. Can you imagine? Oh, my God. That'd be fucking hilarious. Remember JonBenet Ramsey, pineapple?
Yeah.
They went and found that in her.
Oh, yeah.
Too.
Oh,
it was okay. It's in other cases. But yeah, it's really interesting. That's crazy. I never related it to hunting.
I never want that to happen to me, because they open my stomach. They'd be like, oh, my God. There's just a fucking Big Mac floating in whiskey.
Very true. Oh, God damn. Okay. So police were trying to track down where the fuck these calls were coming from. But they were, like I was saying, they were so short, it was difficult for them to do so. Until he made the last call from the booth across from Mickey's Diner. But by the time they had actually gotten there, they were like, oh, they tracked it down. But by the time they got there, like Paul, or this guy they didn't know, he was completely gone.
Yeah.
But 2 days later, he called back. Want to hear that call?
Do I?
All right, here it is.
Don't talk, just listen. I'm sorry what I did to Compton. I couldn't help it. Don't know why I had to stab her. I am so upset about it. I keep getting drunk every night. I can't believe it. It's like a big dream. I can't think of being locked up. If I get locked up, I'd kill myself. I'd rather kill myself than get locked up. I'll try not to kill anybody else.
So, it's so freaky.
It is, yeah. It's scary when he's like, don't talk, just listen, you know? And then he's like telling him, like, I can't get locked up and fucking stop murdering people. Like,
did you say he gets drunk and then just goes and murders people?
Yeah. He's like, I just get really drunk and then I can't help myself. Yeah.
Don't drink with him.
Hell no. Sadly, Kimberly had just moved from Wisconsin to Minneapolis after she graduated high school in search of a job that exact same day that she came across Paul, and that's why she was excited to explore the city and get to know, you know, this new place where she was living. But in a crazy twist, a mentally ill man named Alan Lopez was holding his family hostage and confessed to killing Kimberly. And for a couple of months, police thought that they had this weepy voice killer, right? They thought that it was Alan. He's just confessing to everything. Until 1 year later, they had another body.
A year later. Wow.
Yeah. Yep. So, like I was saying, a little over a year later, on July 20th, 1982, 33-year-old Kathleen Greening had been discovered in her bathtub in Roseville by a friend the following day, but her death was ruled an accident. It was ruled an accident, right? So did Paul have anything to do with this? We don't know yet. We'll get back to that. Remember her. So not even a month later after that, on August 5th, 1982, 40-year-old Barbara Simmons, who was a nurse, had unfortunately met a man by the name of Paul Stefani at the Hexagon Bar in St. Paul. And he had asked her for a cigarette, which she gave it to him. And then he offered her a ride home. And unfortunately, she accepted. She even told one of the waitresses at the bar, quote, "He's cute. I hope he's nice since he's giving me a ride home," unquote. Barbara was stabbed to death with what they thought was an ice pick or a screwdriver when they found her. Her body was discovered by a newspaper carrier walking along the Mississippi River near 29th Street. Once again, the weepy killer called police. Here's that call.
Play your emergency.
Please don't talk, just listen. I'm sorry I killed that girl. I stabbed her 40 times. Kimberly Compton was the first one. Oh, my God. Oh, I don't know what's the matter with me. I'm sick. I'm going to kill myself, I think.
Where are you?
I'm just going to... If somebody dies with a red shirt on, it's me. I killed both of you. I'm sorry. I'll never make it to heaven.
Calm down.
So it's like, that call, it's like, he's like, I killed Kimberly Compton and now I killed her. I stabbed her, what he said, like 40 times, Barbara Simmons. It was just like, fucking ridiculous.
The Muppet Baby strikes again.
The what strikes again?
Muppet Baby.
Oh my God.
Sounds like a grown-up beaker or literally. Something.
The crazy thing is, though, they're like starting to realize, like at first they kind of thought they were prank calls. I mean, it kind of sounds like it, right? But they had never mentioned an ice pick with these murders. So they were like, wait, this isn't fake. Only a murderer would know what he's using, obviously, duh. So they
and
ended
then
up.
And he named both women, right?
And he named the women, right, yeah. So they actually ended up releasing, like, some of these calls. So they're like, maybe, like, somebody could recognize this.
They're like,
stupid.
These are too good and funny. You guys need to hear these.
Maybe not that way. Yeah, just if anybody could recognize a stupid voice. So by now, the police are wondering if these calls are related to any other, you know, unsolved murders. And sure enough, that's when they come across the other phone calls of like Karen Potack when you mm-hmm. call about, you know, potentially murdering or finding her body. I mean, you know, like I mentioned earlier, Paul had been convicted once before of aggravated assault. So police went through mugshots of like past offenders with a history or like, you know, violent assaults or whatever, narrowing down to only 8 photos. And so a waitress at the Hexagon Bar, where she had been when she came across Paul, she was shown these mugshots, and she picked out a man named Paul Stefani. So she totally recognized him that night. She told police that Barbara left with Stefani that night, and because she remembered Barbara telling her,
yeah,
I hope he's nice, all this stuff. So, you know, she totally knew. Police started to, like, dig deeper into Paul's past, discovering that he worked at the Malberg Manufacturing Company, exactly where he mentioned the attack of Karen Potack in that 911 call.
Oh, shit.
So he's like, he got fired from that place, and they found her body nearby, so it's like,
oh,
that's
man.
Connecting too, right? He soon became the investigator's main suspect, so police set up a surveillance team on Paul's apartment complex. So Paul left his residence on the evening of August 21st, 1981, and while investigators were able to follow him to Minneapolis, they eventually just lost track of him. Several hours later, a man called police after witnessing a woman being stabbed with a screwdriver. The man attempted to intervene, but the suspect, Paul, he like started threatening him, and he fled the scene. So this is what happened. Paul left his apartment complex on August 21st. In Minneapolis, and when police lost track of him, Paul came across 21-year-old Denise Williams on Hennepin.
How the fuck did police lose track of him?
I don't know. I know when I read that,
that's
I was
some bullshit.
Furious.
Someone fucking died because of that.
Yeah, there's like 2 people he's killed, and he's already attacked, you know, other women. It's like, how do you lose track of this guy? I don't. That was so infuriating when I read that. So yeah, he finds 21-year-old Denise Williams on Hennepin and 6th Street because she was a sex worker. So he offers her a ride home. And she accepts it. Although Paul starts to drive through like a dark suburban area rather than like kind of going towards the city where she was trying to go home. Yeah. And then he pulls like onto like a dead end road and stops the car, leans over and starts stabbing Denise with a screwdriver between like 13, 15 times. And so during this attack, Denise was able to hit, she found a glass bottle like on the floor of the car, took it and just fucking smashed him over the head with it.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, causing, like, cuts and, like, all the stuff to his head and his face and stuff. Then Denise screams, like, trying to flee out of the car. He's trying to kill me. So she drew the attention of this guy I was talking about, Douglas Panning. And after seeing Paul trying to stab her again, he ran towards them and began to wrestle with Paul. Thank fucking God. So thankfully, this allowed Denise to just run away from the whole situation to get out of there. The man then furious runs back to his house to get a gun. But then when he came back, Paul had just, he took off. So then that's when he called 911 to get Denise help. And then Paul decides to go back to his apartment where he noticed he's bleeding like crazy. So he's like, well, unfortunately, I couldn't find a 911 call for this. But he did call 911 to like get himself help because he was like bleeding all over.
Yeah, help me. I'm bleeding all over the place. I try to scrub these people 61 times with their screwdriver, but then I'm bleeding.
I was just really trying to find one.
Shut up, don't talk.
But thankfully, it was this call that confirmed that Paul was, in fact, this quote-unquote weepy-voiced killer. And it linked him to the attack of Denise. Thank God. And she survived. Upon further investigation, they later connected Paul to the murder of Barbara Simmons. During Paul's trial in Barbara Simmons' murder case, Paul's ex-wife and his sister testified that they believed the caller claiming that he killed these women was, in fact, Paul Stefani. Although they testified, it wasn't enough to identify Paul as the weepy voice killer, since this hysterical crying distorted the voice, so they couldn't really make him like the suspect of all those. So thankfully Paul was convicted of the murder of Barbara Simmons and the attempted murder of Denise Williams, and was sentenced to 40 years, but not for Kimberly, all the other women's just kind of sucks. But while in prison, he got a cancer diagnosis, I think skin cancer, and he decided to confess to the murders, including Kathleen Greening, the woman found dead in her bathtub. Like I said, I was going to get back to that. Remember her? She found dead in her bathtub. It was ruled an accident. He confessed to drowning her in the tub.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, although they thought it was odd since he'd never made a call for that one. But when investigators went through some of her items, they found an address book in her home, and Paul's phone number was inside of it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so they're... kind of believed him, So he just wanted to get off of his chest, I guess, after murdering these women. But he ultimately died in prison on June 12th, 1998, from skin cancer at the age of 53 years old. Good riddance, asshole.
Bam.
That's the story of the fucking loser, Paul Stefani. Stupid fucking calls.
Hope he didn't use that voice in prison. The guys there might like it.
He might, yeah. He was in there for a while. I'm sure he did. Oh, that's horrible. Anyways, we're at the end of episode 74. We will be back next week with a new gruesome episode. But in the meantime, if you haven't heard, Eric has started a new podcast. Don't worry. He's not leaving us, guys. Don't worry. But every Wednesday, his new podcast.
Maybe.
No, don't. If it don't takes you fucking off, dare.
I'm out this
don't
bitch.
You fucking dare. You can't. But it's called Low Dosage Fun with Eric and Levi. They release a new episode every Wednesday.
And if you like all the shit I talk here, you should listen to that one.
More comedy side of Eric.
Yeah,
I guess.
We don't talk about murders.
You've talked about spooky stuff like ghosts and paranormal stuff at one time.
It's a podcast about everything and a podcast about nothing.
Yes, exactly. I like it. There you go.
With the homie Take Levi, a listen. So
it's on Spotify, Apple. Sorry, what were you saying?
Thanks for... shouting this out.
Yeah. I meant to do it a while ago. I keep forgetting. So check it out every Wednesday. Low Dosage Fun, Apple, Spotify, wherever you listen to podcasts. Thanks for listening. Until next Monday.
Oh, wait. One more thing. If you guys also like true crime podcast, don't listen to anyone else's but ours.
I mean, I agree. All right. Until next Monday, stay safe and be aware.
Peace.